This week in Retronauts, though I don't have a script, if I did, I would be the king of red lines.
Just it's a small agony best. From out of my mouth.
It's the best. It's the best I can do. Hello, welcome to Retronauts, the podcast with jokes like that. And sometimes we talk about computer games, you know, if things are going a little bit badly, which thankfully they are. So this should be an interesting episode full of devastatingly insightful critique of the computer game known as The Legend of Zelda: The Wind Waker, best known for its GameCube bell in, I forgot when it came out. Does anyone know off the top of their head?
2002, I want to say. Hang on, let's find out.
It was 2002. You nailed it. Well done. Well done.
How late is released, that?
Well, actually, it was 2002 in Japan, very late, late December in Japan. But it didn't make it over here to 2003. However, what? I still think that it counts. I think what you said counts. And of course, 10 years later, The Legend of Zelda: The Wind Waker HD, which was put out on the Wii U and devastatingly not the Switch. You can blur all you like.
I will blur.
That's the version. Well, then blur away, my friend.
I'm gonna.
But what we should do first, before even blurring, yeah.
It's not really bloody, is it? It's quite high definition.
Oh god.
Oh, honestly, it's still better than the joke I led with. You know,
it's really good.
I've set the bar so low that everything anyone says is going to be an absolute stitch. yes, let's introduce ourselves. I think people know who I am. I'm Stuart Jip. Hello, and who's coming to me from Scotland there?
Hello, I'm Shemi. I organised a big mug of coffee to get me through this recording, and I've just looked in my mug now, and there's a giant wad of dog hair in here, so I'm not going to be drinking that.
You're going to pick it out and then drink it, or you'll drink around it? Or
no.
Do you think that the dog hair floating in the coffee is reminiscent of the King of Red Lions floating on the Great Light Sea, or whatever it's called?
Not in any way, shape, or form.
Not even remotely? Okay, I tried. Let the record show that I tried.
Because, and, like, the King of Red Lions skimming across the open sea inspires awe and excitement, and this inspires kind of revulsion and disgust.
Yeah, you're quite right there. I'd just like to let it be known for all the listeners that to humanise the podcast, and due to the fact it's quite hot, I opened my windows and didn't shut them and forgot. And what you're hearing now
is an enormous
aeroplane flying over.
Right!
And it seems to be constantly flying over and somehow not leaving. Sure. I don't know what's happening, and there's nothing I can do about it. I'm not going to, you know, jeopardize the people on that aircraft in any way for the sake of a podcast.
But I'm lobbing stones at it.
Well, I have tried, but I can't re-etch. But who else is with us today, not from Scotland?
I'm Dave Bulmer, and I'm here mostly in my capacity as I usually am, as person who remembers what it was like to play this the first time round. And I haven't played it again since. So I'm really going to be running on fumes today.
You really should have done a full 100% playthrough of both versions.
I should, and I've not even touched it, like the GameCube version. It's such a sacred memory to me that I've just let it be where it is. Yeah, well, I loved it.
That seems like a pretty good place to kick off then, don't you think? With Dave's exciting reminiscence of The Wind Waker. Do you not think?
I mean, but people get enough of my excited reminiscences about things they either were or weren't there for, and if they were, they have better memories, and if they weren't, it's boring.
I think the people have a bottomless capacity for your remembering, in all honesty.
All right. Okay, well, just to provide my bottom then for a moment, what I do remember about Wind Waker...
Chance would be a fine thing.
In the broadest sense, is that, you know, obviously we'd just had Ocarina of Time, and I, more than you, had rather had my mind blown by that. But Wind Waker came along and went, yeah, but what if it was lovely? And that's my main memory of it, is just every moment of it being something of a delight. And of course, there are, maybe not every moment of it, because later on there are some tedious fetch questing bits and so on. But I just fundamentally liked being in that world. I had enough time because I was just leaving uni. I think this, I certainly started playing this in my uni room and finished playing it in my flat with Abby. So maybe that is why I'm able to like separate out all the memories, you know, the first half of it being just lovely experiences. And then all the tedious mucking about happened when life was being renewed anyway. So it was just like I partitioned it off in that way.
That's quite beautiful, that.
But no, it was, I just flipping loved it. I suppose a little mention ought to be made of the fact that, you know, and everyone knows this, so I'm only mentioning it so that people don't go like, you didn't mention it, is that when they first unveiled this, a load of guys went, they went, no, Link is serious, and it should be drawn seriously. And I was going, no, I think Link is from the Game Boy, and he's a sweet little elfy guy, and oh, this yeah. is absolutely perfect. So that was my, as I was playing it, I was like, finally, a return to real Zelda, basically.
Because that's of very the style interesting. Of it. I hadn't conceived of that before. Like the idea that it's an extension of the of something like Link's Awakening, where things yeah. are necessarily simplified.
Well, that was I must admit my introduction to Zelda. Apart from I saw the cartoon on TV, but that's my first Zelda game.
Oh, and a tremendous cartoon, yeah.
Yeah, and I just thought and still think that it's perfect in every way. The actual Game Boy original game is just gorgeous and beautiful.
The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, you are yes. referring to. Yeah.
I am referring to
I mean,
to that.
That's my Zelda. That's my favorite yeah. Zelda.
Really?
It's perfect. I think yes. we may have talked about it before, but
sure
I had
have.
Never actually thought of that notion of, like, we're transposing this this more abstract aesthetic into, you know, cutting edge visuals.
Well, because
as what they were at the time.
Yeah, but at least that's how I interpreted it. Because
yeah.
when you take a little sprite like that, there are two different kinds of people who are going to play that game, and same goes for the SNES game, same goes for the NES game.
Yeah.
One of those types of person is going to play it and see what it is on the screen. And I saw a sweet little cartoon boy walking about. Another kind of person is going to go, this is meant to represent something else, and I'm imagining that thing. So they imagine a realistic guy. And that is kind of what Ocarina of Time gave us, you know, in that it moved in that direction
yes.
as close as an N64 could.
Yes.
But no, I liked it being a little cartoon guy, and so this was kind of my Zelda when this came out. I was like, yeah.
They were also coming off Majora's Mask, which is a much moodier, more atmospheric sort of
yes.
effort. They're not the way I've beaten that one yet. Shame, how did you come to Wind Waker? And do you know when that was and in what circumstances and what you took away from that?
Yeah, well, I had played Link's Awakening back when I had the Game Boy, the yeah. Game Boy Pocket. And because that was my first console, the Game Boy Pocket. And
good place to start.
Link's Awakening was like, I think, like the fourth game we got for it, and barely made it to the first dungeon. Could not figure that game out at all. But we enjoyed it. And so when I got my GameCube and saw, oh, The Legend of Zelda, oh, I remember Zelda, that'd be good. And then I bought The Wind Waker. So I completely skipped Ocarina and Majora. Like I said in the Ocarina of Time episode, my first exposure to Ocarina of Time was as the free pack-in with
yeah,
the Wind
the
Waker.
Yeah, the bonus disc, right, yeah.
So I had no idea about this controversy at all. It was just I picked it up, I put it in, I started playing, and it was, like Dave says, it was lovely.
Yeah.
It was just a very, very pleasant game to look at and to play. Although, having said that, I did get to Forsaken Fortress and just stop playing.
That's
for a long time there.
The barrel stealth thing, right?
Yes, because I found this...
That's very early on in the game.
I know.
No,
I imagined...
When I had it on the GameCube, I did the same thing, so yeah. I get it. But go on, sorry.
I imagine that the idea behind the Forsaken Fortress was that it actually takes a lot of the danger out of the game because you can't actually die. If you get caught, you don't die. You just
yeah.
get put back into prison. So I kind of imagine that's what they were going for, but for me, that was even more stressful because I couldn't fight them.
Was it psychologically losing a life or getting a game over for me is less irritating than being sent back to the start, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I think it was a combination of having to navigate this 3D space, because you have to take down all of the searchlights.
Yes.
Having to navigate that in this fairly repetitive layout while also being constantly shunted back to the prison cell to start again, I think that kind of confused and annoyed me.
Mm-hmm. Have you replayed this game? Like,
yes,
in HD? Because what I find fascinating, and I always find this is the case. Now, in Ocarina of Time, I'm going to get some details wrong, so please forgive me, noughties, but is it the Gerudo Fortress where there's a similar stealth section?
Yes, yeah.
I found that epoch-definingly irritating.
Yes.
I could not do that. And the Forsaken Fortress, for whatever reason... Now, I played Wind Waker HD. I played the Wii U version. Full disclosure, I don't know if they made it easier or something, because with that whatsoever. I just found it completely easy.
But this was functionally my first 3D game.
Yeah, no, that's
like one of my first.
What interests me about it is that there are things in games like this, like the I don't want to mention it because it ruins the joke, but the barrel. The Carnival Night Zone barrel. I speak, of course, of the sticking points of legend, the myth, the folklore of gaming. And it does make me wonder to what extent it is a reflection of the player and their whatever situation they were in or whatever standard they were at when they played the game. Because playing it now in HD, for me, and I'm not good at Zelda games, anyone who's seen me stream them can vouch for that. For me, it's just kind of, I don't know why, but it's just like, no, that's fine. I have no issue with this. The rules seemed very clear to me.
No, it is demonstrably fine. I'm not, sorry, I was telling you that as my experience with the game rather than to criticize Forza.
No, I get you. I just find that stuff interesting because it's the stuff that passes into, like, not received opinion, but everyone would say, like, oh yeah, that game's great, except for this bit. You know, everyone would say that. And it's always interesting to me where the difference lies in what I or someone else would find incredibly difficult, but for anyone not in that position, they would just walk it. I don't know. It's interesting to me. I'm sorry. I get into tangents.
I got stuck in there for a wee while, and then I can't remember when I picked it back up, but I picked it back up, and kind of, I'm fairly sure I got through it fairly comfortably, and I just had a great time with it, just enjoyed it from start to end.
I mean, it's probably not it's a common notion of, like, when you have a game that's not a stealth game and they introduce a stealth section, that's a big sticking point for a lot of people. I agree with that, to be honest. I often don't enjoy it because they don't really have the, either they have too complex mechanics or not complex enough mechanics, and that kind of sticks in my craw. But
into my psyche is that I don't remember minding that section because you were waggling about inside a barrel and it just looked funny and cute and I liked looking at it, so it's okay.
It's good. I mean, you could argue that it is quite literally scraping the barrel, though, couldn't you? If you wanted to do it as a funny joke.
I think it is oddly paced because it is like you start the game expecting, you know, Zelda, sword fight, sword and shield, like...
Yeah.
You know, the traditional Zelda stuff.
Yep.
And then you get given the sword, and there are basically no combat encounters to speak of before the sword is then taken away from you again. I would have thought that kind of section would have been better as a kind of like mid-game pace breaker, like a way to kind of shake things up in the mid-game to stop you getting too complacent. But it's front-loaded that bit, and I don't quite understand the logic, but then this was a game with a lot of development issues, wasn't it?
It was. It's something that's definitely going to come up because, I mean, I think to myself, like, I guess the reason they do that is to make it so that when you return to the Forsaken Fortress, you are now just like a death machine, and it's all just breezy as hell. But it is an interesting choice to put it that way, and you mentioning the pacing is just interesting as well, because I think this is a game that sort of both does and doesn't have enormous pacing issues. It's like sort of Schrodinger's, is that how you pronounce it? Schrodinger's pacing. It's weird. It's like the structure of Wind Waker, which we must talk about, is extremely strange, and I can't think of anything else like it that I've played, because obviously there is the sense of freedom when you get out onto sort of, I'm going to call it the Great Sea, because I think that's what it's called. And once you get out into the Great Sea, you have the freedom to more or less go anywhere. And if you have the bait for the fish fella, you can fill out the map, gradually learn more about it, what items are hidden in which square. I'm pretty sure every square has at least one significant sort of thing to do in it, or at least some kind of information that you need. And for me, when I played it, I forgot about the fish. And similar to Epona in a way, I never realized it was missing because I never really felt particularly like I needed it. And I didn't really clock about like how some of the squares were filled in and some weren't. I just thought, well, they will be eventually, you know, because I'm so used to modern open worlds that as you go into the uncharted spaces, they will automatically populate the map for you. And no, it doesn't do that. And then, of course, when someone reminded me about that, I realized that I was at reached the Triforce Hunt stage of the game. Admittedly, the neutered Wii HD version. But I realized that I had nothing to go by. You have the Triforce map, but then you still need to find the islands that it corresponds to. And that ended up being a huge chunk of my playthrough because, to be frank, the rest of the game is not particularly difficult. The dungeons are quite straightforward, I thought, the whole way through. The wind dungeon is the only one I can remember being a little bit tricksy, but even then I didn't really have any problems with it. But I kind of liked that coming off Ocarina where I was stuck in everything and everything seemed so difficult. I was suddenly playing this much breezier, more colorful, cartoonish, and yet still involving emotionally experience.
I would say more like of
there's gonna, I mean, there's obviously going to be spoilers in this podcast, but this segment when you go to when you see Hyrule suspended in time underwater,
that's amazing,
right? Well, I was already getting into it. I'm not really a Zelda lore person, or at least I wasn't. I bought Hyrule Historia yesterday because I now want to know about this stuff. And I'm looking forward to reading it, but not only having played Ocarina quite recently and going into what is suddenly, you realize is Hyrule Castle when the music starts playing.
Yeah.
And initially I'm like, I don't know about the Zelda lore. I don't know about these things being connected. I have no idea about that. I know there is a timeline, but I don't know what the actual connections are. I haven't done my research. I haven't played the games. How could I know? And I hear that music and I'm like, oh, that's odd. It's an interesting choice. Is this Hyrule Castle? You go outside and you see the field. You see Hyrule Field, you know, and it's different, but it's obvious what it is.
Yeah.
And there's that sudden realization that I had of just like, oh, this isn't spun off. This isn't another timeline. This is many years
This is the first time they did that, as far as I can remember. This is like, apart from just like, this is a Zelda game, so we're going to do references to Zelda stuff. References is the wrong word.
I get what you mean, because that's what I thought it was initially. I just thought, oh, that's Q. Oh, wait, yeah, no, it's not Q. It's devastating.
But what I mean is that in the previous games, they would have like an Octorok, because it's a Zelda game. This is the first time that they went, now then. Do you remember that previous game you played? Well, check this out.
Well, this is... I have... This might turn into a tangent, because this is a bugbear of mine.
No, it's all good.
I have an issue with the way that the Zelda timeline has been consecrated.
Yep. Because... Preach.
Because, like, Miyamoto and Aonuma maintain, and have maintained for years, that they have been maintaining this timeline internally, and they know what, like, where everything goes, and each new game that comes out is supposed to fit into this grander saga. And first of all, I think that's rubbish. I don't think they do that.
Nope.
Second of all, even if it's not rubbish, it doesn't, like, it doesn't have as much of an effect as just playing through the games, right?
Yep.
It doesn't improve my experience with the games to know, oh, right, well, A Link to the Past actually comes after Link's Awakening. You know,
I think it ruins it.
Yeah, because I don't need to know that. I think these are, like, vibes-based. Yeah. You know, I think these are about, like, how they can, like, remix and reinterpret these traditional ideas. And that's what I think made the Hyrule Castle reveal so spectacular in Wind Waker was the fact that if you are familiar with this series at all, you will know that music and you will know that setting. And even if you hadn't played, like, Ocarina of Time specifically, the iconography is so broad and so... the iconography is so broad and the music so familiar, even if you'd played A Link to the Past, that this... Because that's how I did it. No, I must have played Ocarina at this point as well. But, like, I would have played A Link to the Past before that.
Yeah.
And I think it is more special and more magical if, rather than concern yourself with, oh, it goes Minish Cap, and in the Four Swords games, and then Ocarina of Time, which then branches into three timelines, and so Wind Waker comes after Ocarina of Time in this timeline. I think rather than concern yourself with that, I think it is just if you go with the feeling of it, the feeling of returning to Hyrule and seeing what it's become. Yeah. I think that's far more impactful
than definitely.
Meticulous timeline tinkering.
The Zelda timeline is like the most wiki poison thing out there.
Yes.
What it reminded me of, which I found exciting, is that, and this, no one is ever going to have made this comparison before, so I feel actually like a bit of a godlike genius here. it reminded me of Curse of Chucky. I think that's what it's called. It's the one where you think it's a reboot, but then halfway through the movie, Chucky pulls the makeup off his face to reveal that it's actually a sequel. And it's a great moment. I thought it was a bit like that. And I don't, again, I'm not that, I think that connecting the games in these small ways is nice. I quite like it, especially if they do it with some grace, like they did here.
Well, yes, I think grace is the word for it, because I think this bit in Wind Waker is very graceful.
Yeah, the connecting it is great. What they do internally by putting the games on some, like... Either by putting them on a timeline or putting them on a non-rigid timeline, because it seems like every time a new game comes out, somebody has to update the timeline because it's gone wrong now. That's great. It's just mapping it out isn't in the spirit of it. It's always felt like another telling of a legend. And when that was the official line, it was much better.
It's fun, though, isn't it? To do that?
Yeah, if you're a big dork.
Well, I'm a big dork. I mean, present Retronauts, for fuck's sake.
I think the Zelda timeline was a lot of fun when it was, like, something that fans were working out by spotting little references, and this game was the strongest one. It's when they published it that
when
it went
wrong. When they canonized it, right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. I do get where you're coming from. I think the frustration may be more with, like, the insistence, rather, the execution of the games is fine.
Brilliant.
To me, that the insistence is what's frustrating. The sort of no, this is not correct.
Thing. It's kind of like ending explained videos, right? Now people play a Zelda game while furiously scribbling notes to work out where on the timeline it is, and that is against the spirit of it. You're supposed to just play it
incorrect?
And recognize things.
Is it like? I do understand that. I do.
Because it's supposed to be a legend, isn't it? It's supposed to be a story eternally retold. Yeah.
That's what I thought, yeah.
So what you're saying is my copy of Hyrule Historia is now out of date and inaccurate.
Yes, it is.
It literally is.
More games.
Son of a... It cost me £12.
Well, listen, it cost me loads more, and I've kind of regretted the purchase ever since.
Well, but this is it, because so far as I understand it, after the release of Breath of the Wild, I think, a few years later, anyway, they released a new compendium.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that updates the timeline again and changes everything around.
There's another timeline now, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah. So the timeline that is in the Hyrule Historia is no longer the official timeline.
Right.
And like I say, at a certain point, I'm just kind of like... Just leave it, lads. Just leave it out.
I'm
going to
put my foot through my copy of Hyrule Historia. I'm going to send Shigeru Miyamoto the bill. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But yes, I think, in isolation or otherwise, I do think it's an excellent piece of storytelling. The thing I don't like about it, and I'm not going to harp on about it because I know people will roll their eyes, but I'm not a fan of what happens to Tetra.
No.
Because Tetra is a very vital character in that, and I very much like her presence in the game. But she becomes nothing. She gets transformed, realizes there's Zelda or something. I don't think that makes sense, to be honest. That's the part that felt underwritten to me. It's just like, oh, by the way, you're Zelda. Like, what?
Yeah. Why? You know Zelda from Zelda. You're that.
Oh, that's who they mean. That's what the title's about. I've always wondered.
It's this very strange execution of that idea, because...
Yeah.
I can't remember where I read this. I'm not sure if this is like a fan theory or like it was just a little tidbit in one of the instruction manuals or what. But it might have been a gossip stone in Ocarina. Anyway, no, I think it was Zelda 2's manual. Anyway,
right. The
point being that like all the descendants of the Hyrule royal line give their daughters the name Zelda.
Yeah.
So by technicality, I suppose in a certain way, you could interpret her as being Zelda. That's great, that's fine, I'm with you so far. But then it's like, as soon as she realises that, she stops using the name Tetra that she has used her entire life, and she starts going by Zelda, and she becomes a completely different character.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a very banal character, unfortunately.
That's what the problem was.
She was before.
That's what the problem was. If she put on a version of the Zelda dress, except cooler and looking a bit more piratey, and just carried on being the same, it would have been brilliant, yeah.
Well, I mean, if I want to jump ahead a bit, I'm going to come back, but, like, you know, the finale, just to briefly mention it, when you are fighting Ganondorf alongside Zelda, which is very cool.
How much
cooler would it have been if you'd been fighting alongside Tetra, you know?
Yeah.
If she'd have gone back to the Tetra costume for that scene, that would have been amazing.
Because she's Tetra again in the ending. It's like,
well, this is what is weird about it, because, again, to jump ahead to the ending, there's going to be major spoilers here. The theme of the game, it seems to me, is about leaving the Zelda cosmology behind, about leaving behind the idea that Zelda needs to be about Zelda, Ganon, Hyrule, Triforce, Master Sword.
Mm-hmm. Wash it all away, literally. It's like complete absolution like of everyone.
Yes.
I mean, even Ganondorf has the moment of introspection in this game that I thought was genuinely devastating. Like, I was taken aback by that speech he does. I know it's very, very often quoted, but it's that bit where he's looking, like, haunted, almost, like, regretful, staring into space, saying, I coveted that wind, I suppose.
Well, is that...
And I'm like, oh my god, what are they doing to me?
The fact that this version of Ganon... The part that drives him crazy is you would prefer this to me. You would prefer just destroying the world to letting me have it. Like, and he seems very human and very bitter about that, which I think is excellent.
Yeah. But there's this sort of implication it's more or less completely stated of like, I've made some mistakes. There's been a lot of death, there's been a lot of decay, but it's still the world, you know. It's almost Dark Souls, sorry, but it is. But I thought it was wonderful, and I thought that the fact they gave Ganondorf something of a measurable motivation in this game was impressive, very impressive, and thematically very cogent, I thought. Like, the fact that he has you all the way to the end. Sorry, I'm gonna just jump ahead, because we might as well. This is that kind of discussion, okay?
Yeah, we're in the weeds now.
But
we've all played this.
what, and that, maybe this is all in my head, maybe because I get very like as abstract and sort of conceptual about this stuff sometimes. I can't help it, but the fact that Ganondorf's plan fails because he didn't have enough faith in Link, really. He forces Link to fight these puppets because he's testing him if he's really the hero of time, you know? Mm-hmm. And if he hadn't done that, the king... He could have just touched the Triforce. He could have just done it. But because he doesn't believe in you. That's what his downfall is. The fact that it all comes down to just this incredibly minor little thing, I think is really interesting.
But what the I king, think...
Sorry, go on.
What I think is even more interesting about it is his response to it when he realizes that it's gone wrong again.
Yeah.
And he knows how it's gone wrong, and he laughs.
It's brilliant.
Like, of course this is how it must happen. Of course.
Then, of course, you're in the state of, like, past the point of no return, and there's nothing left but violence. It's very good, I think.
Yeah, it's astonishing.
Yeah, it was absolutely amazing, this, the end of this.
And this is... And so I'm going to go even further past the ending here, because I need you to understand what it was like being there at the time and kind of being a Zelda fan at that time. Because it was like, what you had had was you'd had Ocarina of Time, which was the greatest game ever made. And then Majora's Mask, which is like this spiteful reflection of Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
And then Wind Waker, which is still carrying forward this spiteful reflection, but taking it in this whole new, apologies for the pun here, breath of fresh air direction that ends on the note that, yes, we need to move on from Zelda. We need Zelda to move on and change and become something new, because we've done all we can with it, and like the King of Hyrule and like Ganondorf, it's just exhausted now.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's just, yeah, it reflects this kind of like, it's this idea that oblivion is, maybe it's okay sometimes. It can come to an end. The fact that Zelda is gone and it's Tetra again in the ending is quite significant, because it's like, no, these, they're not humans, but you get what I mean. Like, this is who we are. We're not legends. We're here now.
Yes.
And we have to survive. We have to continue.
And then from there, we got Minish Cap, which isn't about any... It takes place in Hyrule, sure, but it's like, there's no Death Mountain, there's no, like, familiar stuff. It's all new. There's the Light Force and Vati, which I thought was great. I was, like, really interested in that.
Yeah.
And then, so I thought this was it. I thought, oh my god, we are going to move forward. Zelda's going to become... Who knows where Zelda could go from here? It could go anywhere.
Yeah.
And then we got Twilight Princess, which is just... Ocarina of Time 2.0.
Twilight Princess really felt like them... One of those instances where they listened to the fans wrong. You know what I mean?
I completely... Yes. I was talking about this with Shemi off mic, but for me, I'm playing that now. And I'm not going to talk about it too much, because this is not a Twilight Princess episode.
Yeah,
but
doubtless we'll do one.
Playing... Oh, God, yes, we might, if you like swearing. you can get some of that. But for me, where Wind Waker, I think, is quite... It's weird to say this, but I think Wind Waker is minimalist in many ways. Wind Waker is about open space and freedom. And Twilight Princess is like the most maximalist Zelda game I can think of that I've played, and that includes something like Breath of the Wild. It's like everything you do feels like you are told twice to do it.
Yeah.
And yet, despite all the tutorializing, and it is never ending in the first 5 hours of this game that I've played, maybe six, it's still completely esoteric what you actually do a lot of the time, I think. It's the worst of both worlds. It is constantly stopping you to tell you stuff that's not useful.
Yes. You know? No, like, I completely agree. Yeah.
And I don't hate it. I am having fun with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's... not like Wind Waker. Now, Wind Waker, to get onto Wind Waker, because this is the first time I've played this game, okay?
Sorry, do you mind if I just do one last...
By all means.
There is one period that I need to put at the end of that thought.
Yeah.
Which is that when Spirit Tracks comes out, and it is a sequel to Phantom Hourglass, which was a sequel to Wind Waker. So these are like the same cat. These are descendants of this Zelda and this Link who were told at the end of Wind Waker, when you find that new land, it will not be Hyrule. It will be your land. Guess what they fucking call it?
Swaversea.
Milton Keynes.
Well, they call it Hyrule. And the princess is called Zelda. And, you know, and I'm just like, come on, man. Like...
I get it. I do.
They
it's
never get to move past
they
just, it.
They chickened out of something good for a long time.
They cuckoed out for sure. They got cucked. Wow.
Wind Waker.
I played this game through. I took me, I'm going to say, roughly 30 hours to complete this game. I did not in any way, shape, or form come close to 100%ing it. But I would say quite comfortably, and with the song in my heart, that it's my favorite of the 3D Zeldas, and I actually really liked it. Now, I spent most of my playthrough complaining. Because it's me. But coming away from it, I think back on that game and I just think, you know what? I'd play that again. I really liked that a lot. There's so much about this game that just made me smile, you know? It merged together all the aspects of freedom and being guided, because you are very guided, even when you are out in the sea. That it just works for me. It's almost, I mean, for a 30-hour game, it felt breezy. I always felt like I was moving forward and achieving things and not getting hung up on esoteric nonsense. And I had my moments of getting hung up on esoteric nonsense that always inevitably turned out to be me not understanding some crucial mechanic. But everything just worked. Everything felt within reach if I needed it. You know? Now, the HD version, I know, makes quite a lot of quality of life improvements. And I do wonder if I were to go back and play the GameCube version on the Switch 2, for example, which is now where it's now available, I would have as good of a time. And I thought about it, and I honestly think I would probably be fine, you know?
Yeah, and I think the improvements of the HD version, I think, are a little overstated. Like, people are like, oh, this is a completely transformative experience. When I don't think it is. Like, there's a couple of very nice quality of life things, like the Swift sail, I think, is great. The way when people say that they've streamlined the Triforce quest, they don't mean that they've changed it in any significant way. They just mean that they've like taken out one extra little step of busy work.
Yeah.
Because before you had to go back and forth to Tingle's Island like one extra time for each shard. Whereas in the HD version, they just say, just have the shard.
I mean, for me, by that point, I had so much money that it never felt like it would be an obstacle, apart from the actual travel, which you can warp to anyway.
Yeah. Like, I mean, so, they spew money at you in that game.
I have a theory about that section of the game, which is going to be really getting into the weeds, really jipping quite hard, unfortunately. Because I was talking about this with a friend of the show, Task Architect, who I call Other Chris. I'm just giving him a shout out. I thought about the Triforce quests. I thought about the fixes to the Triforce hunt. excuse me, not the Triforce Quest, it's Triforce Hunt, everyone knows that. And I started thinking about how could they fix this? How could they actually fix this? How could they do this and retain the exploration and retain a sense of flow? And I started thinking about how this game had a lot of, obviously, development issues, and how this aspect of the game may have been hamstrung in some way by those issues. And I came to the conclusion, I honestly don't think they could do it without ruining it completely, because I thought the Triforce Hunt was good. I enjoyed it. It was a very enforced, right, go and explore now bit of the game. And had I been exploring previously, which I hadn't, it would have mitigated it enormously. But I think my favorite memories of this game, other than the ending, is of me just sailing around on the sea, listening to the music, salvaging up rupees, getting into little fights on the sea, find a little island, realize, oh, I've got the tool to do this now, you know, playing golf there's an island where you play golf. You have to knock these balls into these holes to get like a piece of heart or something. And every single square of that game, and there's probably like, what, 64 squares, maybe? I don't know. There's a lot. Every single one of them has like a little puzzle or a little challenge. Yes. Like, during the Triforce Hunt, I found this area under the sea that you get sucked into, where you have to shoot fire arrows to light these braziers, but they're hidden all over this quite complex ruined ship kind of thing that you can't actually reach. You have to just use first-person mode and scan the environment until you see the brazier. Some of them really well hidden from certain angles. And I just thought, this is such a satisfying thing to just throw into one square and go, put that in the game. You know, it doesn't further the game. It's not like a mini game. Someone just designed a cool idea for a challenge and thought, we have no way to fit this in the main story. Let's just put it in one of these islands. And you've got like 60 of those, and I enjoyed all of them. I mean, I've complained before about this game's combat encounters, not because the combat's bad, because it's not. It's probably the best Zelda combat played.
The combat in this. The way when you hit and it kind of goes dush, there's and pauses split stop, for a split
there's
second.
Like orchestra hits and a hit stop, and it's wonderful. So and of course, the A button to do the counterattacks as well, right?
Yeah. And when you roll around and go up and get the guy,
or you jump over the dark nuts and you slash the armor strings and it falls off.
Yes!
It's just very reactive. It's not difficult. But the fact is, when the game did get a little bit, I don't like using this word, but maybe a bit more lazy, two or three of the Triforce pieces are found by doing extended combat arenas, like a series of rooms with different enemies in, or that pit where you keep going down and down, fighting more and more enemies. And it goes on a bit, but because the combat is so fun, it's nice just to cut loose in that way, even when it's reasonably brainless.
Yeah.
Since the rest of the game isn't, I think it's okay to have that stuff in there, you know?
It's so much more fun than the equivalent bits in something like Breath of the Wild. And I love Breath of the Wild. That's like, to me, Breath of the Wild is kind of the thing that this game suggested at the end, where it's like, we'll do something totally other.
Breath of the Wild, I feel like it's, if not, it's a spiritual follow-up for sure, in the sense that you've got an open world that you explore. But it did make me think, if they were to do a third Breath of the Wild style game, how cool would it be if it was the ocean?
Well, you know? I challenge you to ever be in a boat again and not think, this is just like Wind Waker. Like, every single time.
I don't really get in boats because I'm not a member of the bourgeoisie.
Well,
you know,
look, the now and then, if I'm hanging out with my parents, we're on a little holiday somewhere near the sea, they'll go, oh, let's go, there's a thing where you can pay £20 and get on a boat for an hour. Let's do that.
That's not bad for an hour.
There was one where we were sailing around, and they took us to these little islands that were just little lumps in the sea, and they were covered in seals and puffins. And it was the most Wind Waker thing ever. But the reason for that...
That is very Wind Waker, yeah.
The reason for that is that Wind Waker has such a character, and that is what you would lose if you did streamline the Triforce quest anymore, or if you didn't just sail around and explore. It's so characterful that it takes something as fundamental as the sea and goes like... Yeah, now you're going to think about this game whenever you think about the sea.
Well, I always think that the best way to play the Wind Waker is to just go through the story until you get to the Triforce quest, And that's when you just clear out the entire map, because by that point, you've got all the items.
Yeah, and I think that is what it's designed for.
That's always my favourite part of it.
Yeah, Stu, you were kind of saying that you worried that you did that the wrong way around. But I
did worry that, but now, you're right. That's how I did it, and I had a great time, you know. The only thing I got stuck on was I didn't know how to get to the ghost ship. I got there eventually.
Well, because if you are going to all the islands, like after, let's say, the second dungeon, after the Forest Haven, then you're not going to have the equipment to do anything in a lot of these islands. You really need to have everything in order to make sure you're getting the most out of it. And I think that is kind of a frustrating experience, because you get to a new island, you go, oh, what's this? You spend like a few minutes poking around and then go, well, I can't do anything here. And then you just leave.
I agree. And it did make me think that it might have been nice if the HD version let you write notes on the map. You know, that I thought would have been nice. Like in Phantom Hourglass, you know. Mm. You got a Wii U gamepad. You got a stylus.
But because you were saying as well about the combat encounters, but I remember absolutely loving them.
Oh, yeah.
Because the moment that sticks out for me the most in that game is when you get into Hyrule Castle and there's all these frozen moblins and dark nuts roaming around.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, they're all frozen. Phew, this is fine then. So we can we'll just sneak by. There's no problem. And then you get the Master Sword. And then they all unfreeze. And I remember when I was a kid thinking to myself, there is no way that they're going to expect me to fight all these guys. There's going to be a trick. This is going to be like a misdirect or something. So I need to find a way out of here. But no, they really do expect you to fight all of those moblins and dark nuts. And I didn't even realize that I could. But like, fighting all of them and getting through that, I was like, this is so fun. What the hell? Like, I didn't think I could do this. This would, like,
I think what happened with me with that part is, and I think it might be a mistake in that. Okay, let me ask a question first. The original GameCube version, when you do the Triforce hunt, do you get the Triforce map that tells you where about four of the pieces are?
I think so, yes.
Right, okay, because what happened with me is I got that chart. I obviously beelined to the marked areas, and the first two I went to happened to be nearly identical combat. And again, I enjoy the combat, but it did immediately make me think, oh, is this it? Is this what I'm going to be doing for the rest of these? And of course, I happened to do the pit that you go down. I went to another one, and it was the area with the three doors that you do in turn to light the torches. And then there's a second one of those that's almost exactly the same, just with slightly different enemies. And I got all of those in sequence, and it was just like, ah, this is why people don't like this, because it's this. And it turns out, no, I just by sheer accident happened to go to those ones because they were the ones marked on the map. And it made me think maybe they shouldn't have marked those ones. Maybe they should have made it so it's like, or even didn't mark them, or made you buy the charts separately in the way that the GameCube did. And it made me think maybe the GameCube way of doing the Triforce hunt was actually better, because it forces you to engage with it more rather than just beeline to three places, you know? I could be very mistaken about that, having not played the GameCube version to completion. But that's the impression I got, that by streamlining it, by removing steps, they'd actually taken away some of the thrill of discovery and the sense of adventure and the uniqueness of the experience that you're going to have. I mean, marking something like the ghost ship makes sense to me, because then there is still another step you have to take in order to access it. But just to say directly, these three islands have Triforce pieces on, and also they're all combat-based. I thought that was a mistake, personally. But again, I don't know how I would fix it. I can't think of a way of fixing it that doesn't just turn it into tidying up, you know? So it's a difficult one, but my favourite experiences probably were with the Triforce Hunt, when I was just taking the map at my own pace, sailing around, thinking about Assassin's Creed Black Flag, where I did much the same thing, having a lovely time. And we haven't talked that much about the dungeons, have we?
No,
I think we probably should talk about the dungeons. Well, because I guess, there aren't that many of them, are there?
No, there are five. And that is, I think, a sticking point for a lot of people. Because if you went into this not expecting that, then yes, that is going to be disappointing. And I think that's where a lot of the resentment for the Triforce Hunt comes from. Because people wanted another dungeon and instead they got sent out to explore. When, for me, I think exploring is like my favourite bit of Zelda, so I wasn't too sore about that. Yeah. But yeah, no, I can totally see why somebody would be disappointed by that, because it means the game doesn't ever really build to a climax.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest disappointment for me, the real shame for me, is that I think this game has such an amazing learning curve. I think those first three dungeons are absolutely immaculate at kind of like ramping you up to figuring out how the dungeons work. And I only really think it hits its stride, like it stops tutorializing you and starts really getting into the weeds of its dungeons in the last two.
That would be the Temple of Wind and the Temple of Shadow or something. I don't remember.
Earth and
the
Wind,
one where you, the one where you're with Medley and with the annoying little plant Korok guy.
Yeah, yeah. It's the Wind Temple. I thought the Wind Temple was excellent. I thought it was truly like a special dungeon.
I agree. That's the one with the Korok Maker or something.
Makar. Yeah.
Yes, I agree with that. Now, I thought the dungeons in this game were pretty exceptional in general, and yeah, they were a lot easier than the ones in Ocarina of Time. And that's obviously by design, you know. I don't think it can be ignored that in making, air quotes, Toon Link, there is obviously more of an appeal to a younger audience here, obviously. I don't think that that's something that can just be overlooked, because it is an easy game. Even for someone like me, it really was easy, like the whole way through. Even the final boss is easy. You know?
Yes. Yeah, and, agreed.
I have no issue with that as long as it's fun. And it was tremendous fun. I enjoyed it enormously. And my favorite dungeon, and this is maybe a bit sad, I liked the dungeon with Medley because I like Medley. I think Medley is an absolutely charming character, not least because you can essentially throw her into walls.
Yes.
Which is a mean thing to do. But the fact that they've introduced this kind of idea that you're palling around with someone in this dungeon who is helpful, is useful, isn't annoying, and is crucial to solving the puzzles, worked for me big time. Because when I first see Medley, I immediately go, oh my god, I've got to escort this character. But you kind of don't. They've made it as simple as possible. If you lose them, they're going to go back to the door where you started in the room. They're just going to be there. You can just go back and get them again. It's very rare that you're in a position where you have to defend them. There's the hand things. Wall masters, are they? Floor masters? I don't know.
Yeah.
That you have to defend her from. But even then, it's a case of, how do I get around this? How do I solve this? Not a case of attrition. And I felt like in the dungeons, almost every single room was interesting. I like the visual design of all of them. There's a puzzle in, I think it's in Medley's dungeon, and it's probably the most complex puzzle in the game, where you are moving blocks around and rotating things to get light beams onto this particular sort of dais on the wall. I think that's the word. Dais. And that's the sort of thing that in Ocarina of Time would have done my head in. But in this, I just found it so atmospheric and charming, and I wanted to solve the puzzle. I didn't want to look up the solution. I was like, no, yeah, I want to do this. And that room is almost like a puzzle box. As you move things around, the layout transforms and you suddenly go, oh, I see how to do this. I've got to go here. I've got to get the mirror shield, but I can't go there unless I move this and I can get up on top of this and jump to this. And I'm just like, this is what Zelda Dungeon should be for me. It's this sense of discovery without patronizing you, but with also without pointlessly being obtuse, which I feel like Twilight Princess is so far. And it made me just kind of like, I don't know how to describe it. I just think it's fantastic. I enjoyed all the dungeons, and I did enjoy the overworld as well. And the overworld is usually the part I don't like. But because they made the overworld into something where the traversal is thoughtful, at least before you get the swift sail, because once you've got the swift sail, it's like, well, I've done enough of that now. I've earned this, you know?
Yeah.
because I didn't mind adjusting the wind, adjusting the sail. I don't think if I played it on the GameCube that would particularly bother me, because that to me is like, while it does take a little while, so does most of it. So this is not exactly a fast-paced game. It's a fast-moving game, but it's not a fast-paced game. You have to just get into the summer vibes and get.
I think that perhaps Wind Waker is reliant on you having like kind of nothing else to do, because it's slow and it's gradual, and that's a good thing. And so if you start to go, or rather, that's the character of it. If you start to go like, how do I speed this up? I think you lose something.
I thought that having the dungeons towards the end of the game where you were accompanied by a Makar, I forgot the name again, Makar. If I had Makar, I would just drive to the exit. Sorry, that's rubbish. No, but
well, the thing is that every single time he got lost, I ended up saying, dude, where's Makar?
Okay, that was pretty good. But it's not. It takes away from that whole thing of just go in a dungeon. Eventually, you're going to get a dungeon item, and then that's the solution. And yes, that does happen in the game. But there's always something going on that's not just the pattern. Having Medley around, having Makar around, and changing the way you traverse without having to rely on a new dungeon item, which you will also get, I think it just makes for a much more interesting dungeon.
They pack a lot into a very compact space, don't they?
Yeah, basically. That's kind of how I feel about the game broadly. It does feel like the Link's Awakening ethos of every space has to be significant in some way. Yeah. Even if it's just a piece of heart, even if it's just a chart, you know, it's everything's worth doing. Well, and nothing sucks. That's what I like about it.
Yeah. This is kind of the... I guess this is like a huge talking point. So I rarely, if ever, go back to play the 3D Zeldas.
Mm-hmm.
Except like Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. I think those kind of like hit different for me. But like Wind Waker is the first of the games where I find this phenomenon where I think, oh, I should replay that. That was a lot of fun. And I start playing it and I get bored very quickly because I know everything that's coming.
Yeah.
And I know how everything works. Like, just because I know how Zelda works.
Yeah.
It is the point where I think the dungeons are so meticulously, expertly designed and conveyed that it leaves fewer surprises on a return visit. There's not much interest on a return visit.
Yeah.
And that is why the Zelda game that I replay the most is the first one, is because you have that level of freedom to go and do the dungeons and do the overworld in different orders. You know, it still feels quite expressive to play that game.
Mm-hmm.
But this is kind of it, is that my complaint with the later Zelda dungeon ethos is that it's too good.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that it's too world class.
I get what you mean. It's that whole thing of like, when everything is so elegant and meticulous that you lose the sense that you are really important in the space, I think. It's all you're doing is what you have to, what you're supposed to do, you know? It's an odd complaint to vocalize. I do know what you mean, though, and I'm trying to think of another example I can push, but when you're part of something that's so not piecemeal, but you have to do it in a certain way, in a certain order, and there's really no way around that. Like, there's no room for player expression, really. It's do it this way or you won't succeed.
Yeah,
it's not like a difficulty thing. It's kind of a logic thing. It's kind of being locked into someone's idea. And it's like, no, this is my game. I'm expressing my playstyle, not yours.
For example, just random example, but like the ice island where it's spewing ice everywhere, and if you step foot on it, you die.
Yeah.
Or sort of you respawn it back in the boat, rather. And what you need to do is you need to go and get the fire arrows from Mother and Child Isles first. And then you need to go to the ice island and shoot the fire arrow at the entrance that's spewing ice, in order to heat it up just enough for 5 minutes so you can go in and get the item that's inside.
Yeah.
So your first time through, there's a lot of fun and satisfaction in piecing that together. you know, because you're wanting to see what's inside. You're wanting, you're like waiting to see, oh man, what's in there? What, like, what cool item will I get? What, how will I advance the plot? Like that, that's, yeah, that's exciting. That's interesting. And also figuring out like how to get to Mother and Child Islands is a bit of a circuitous route, you know? So once you've pieced that together yourself, that, that's interesting and engaging the whole way through.
Yeah.
On repeat visits, that's nothing. I now know that you need to go and fight the big cyclone. When you see the cyclone, go and ping some arrows at it so that you get the warp, so that you can warp to Mother and Child Isles, so you can get the fire and ice arrows, so you can go to the ice island and shoot the fire arrow at the entrance so you can go in.
Yeah.
Whereas, for example, maybe if you had a very limited time on the island where you could survive, maybe a skilled player could like dash in and grab the item before they die or something, yeah, like that. But the game doesn't want you to do that. It wants you to follow this very, very rigid sequence of events. And once you know that very, very rigid sequence of events, it's kind of nothing. It's just kind of busy work.
So it's a game that like sort of sings on your first playthrough. I mean, that's been my experience, obviously. I can't, I can relate to what you're saying, but I haven't replayed the game and I'm not sure what would stick in my craw if I did. Knowing now what I do know, my temptation is to replay it on the original GameCube version, you know, so I can see what that's like. But,
well, it's worth finding out what it's like, but yeah, I kind of agree with this. Obviously, my memory is much less clear than either of you because I haven't played it in a long time. But that's because whenever I have tried to play it again, yeah, there is this feeling of like, I don't need to do this anymore. It was a wonderful experience that happened once. I think Shame has got it exactly there, what the what I'm feeling.
It's a fundamental issue I have with the Zelda series thus far, and it does carry into Wind Waker for me, and I think this has probably been quite widely debated, but the fact that, and I'm sorry, this is going to sound so facile, okay? Is that the word? Facile? Facile?
Facile, yeah.
Facile, excuse me. I've only ever read it because I'm very clever. no, I'm dumb. Don't think I'm clever.
You've never been called facile to your face.
I never have. I usually get called something else, like bald. No, I won't say that word. a sticking point I do have with Zelda, and it's going to seem childish, is that you can't jump at will. And I know, okay, I know that it's designed around that. But I honestly feel like I would like all the games more if you could, because feeling like you're stuck to the ground,
yes,
makes it so much more rigid for me.
And I do agree with this, games, even though I know it's wrong.
In the later games, of course, in Breath of the Wild, I think, maybe Skyward Sword, I'm not sure, you can jump.
It's just, we've all just been trained that jumping is the basic thing in games, so you are aware of the lack of it whenever there is a lack of it.
Well, it's. I think psychologically, things like that just feel more like you're in control and you're not just moving a little puzzle piece around, you know, because when I'm in the boat, when I'm sailing on the great sea, you know what I'm doing all the time for no reason?
What?
Jumping. I'm doing a little Mario Kart boat jump because you can.
Oh, yeah,
there's
you
a dedicated
can jump with
button
the boat
for
part,
it.
Yeah, I was doing that a lot.
And I'm doing it all the time because it makes me feel more in control and more free. And then, of course, once you're landing, it's back to like, oh, there's like a knee-high rock there. You better just walk into it for a full second. An issue I ran into with Twilight Princess that is carried across the series as well is now Twilight Princess, for the first about 5 hours, it feels like almost every puzzle is solved by finding the right invisible fucking spot to stand on and press the L button to do something context sensitive, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't like that. I don't like it when they put a million things on one button. It's one of my absolute pet peeves. I think Wind Waker mostly avoids it, but it's not perfect for it. I can tell you that. I also think, while I'm complaining, do you not think it's a bit weird that you get the hook shot and you get, like, the sling rope thing? Like, aren't they the same?
It is a little weird. I think there are two things that mitigate it. Is number one, they're both at complete opposite ends of the game.
Very true.
But also, part of the problem, I think, is that the grappling hook in the original GameCube version was nowhere near as good.
I was going to say, my memory of it is that one was a baby training one, and then one was like an upgrade. Have they kind of made them the same in the remake?
Well, the thing is, they are separate items, and you do need to use both to do different things. But the problem is, I feel like the hookshot could do both of the puzzles, if that makes sense. It's a bit of a disconnect for me.
Yes, like because they are both functionally just long chains or ropes with a hook on the end. But yeah. One is one where you like swing it around and toss it over arm, and the other one is just one that like springs out and in.
Yeah.
I see what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. You're kind of like, well, why is it that wearing the iron boots and using the hook shot? Well, no, I suppose it's not really so much the actual logic of it as it is the game design. Like, well, why did you have these two very similar items?
For me, it's more that, like, in the final dungeon, there is this puzzle you must solve, which is, you actually have a few options. It's the room with the lava. You can solve it by using the, I don't know what it's called, is it just a grappling hook? The rope one?
Yeah.
Right. If you use the grappling hook, you can then climb the grappling hook to the top and stand on the platforms. That's how I did it. But it made me just think, like, but why can't I hookshot onto that platform and then stand on it? It would be quicker. It would be perfectly possible given the logic of the hookshot that has been established. But the game just won't let you do it. So for a while, I was kind of like, but I can't swing across there. It's not possible, you know, until I realized, oh, you're supposed to use the thing to just, and then just climb it. It's the same solution, but you come to it in a more convoluted way, I think. And to me, that was a bit of a flaw, but I'm only just saying that because I'm in the portion of the episode where it's more negative and the stuff that I didn't like. And I think that, what Shame and you have, and you, David, sorry, I don't know why I said you, as if I was talking to either one of you specifically. I'm talking to both of you at all times. What you said, really, to boil it down, is there's the replay value isn't there for this one, you know, or at least not in the same way. Because while there is freedom in the game, it's fundamentally hamstrung by the fact that it's not really worth doing until you have all the items. So for the first, like, 20 hours, you're going to be doing exactly what you're supposed to, you know?
Exactly, yes. That's literally it. I think on replays, I've only ever managed to make it to, like, Tower of the Gods before I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm kind of fed up with this.
I mean, obviously it's going to be different from person to person, obviously.
Of course. Well, I know there's a lot of people for whom replaying Zelda games is a very, like, joyous experience, and that's, like, that's not to take away from them. It's just kind of, like, the way that I feel.
Yeah, I didn't really need to say that. It's just interesting, I think, how different people respond to these things differently.
Sorry. I didn't think that was you. It's just that I know how Zelda fans are. I've been having this discussion for a very, very long time, and it often gets quite fraught when I never mean to be, like, dismissive.
No.
Because the only Zelda that I would say outright, yeah, I did not enjoy that was Skyward Sword and the Wii.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Which I'll be getting to eventually.
Yes, looking forward to that.
I think something interesting that's come up from this that I think is pretty sparkling, actually, is the comparison to Link's Awakening and to 2D Zelda in general, because now that I think about it, what is the other Zelda game that has a grid-based map like that? It's Link's Awakening, isn't it? You know?
And at some point in that game, you realise, oh, I'm going to look at my little map and I'm going to go and fill in those squares, and that becomes in a totally different way, just kind of in your own head, but that becomes a little goal.
Interestingly enough, Link's Awakening is a game I've replayed about six times, and that's also very regimented in how you progress.
Yeah.
It really does feel like that.
That's the thing. It's like, for me, is I've only fully played through Link's Awakening once. It's the same situation for me with Link's Awakening, although I did have a replay of it a couple of years ago, and I got to the final dungeon and then stopped, so I don't know what was up with that.
Just say you beat it. It's close enough, isn't it?
Like, because I just finished playing through Zelda 1, then Zelda 2, then A Link to the Past, and then Link's Awakening, and I think at that point the hyperfixation had worn off, so I was like...
Viral fixation.
Yeah, that's just too much Zelda, isn't it?
Viral fixation. Very good.
Yeah. Thank you.
But the... Yeah, it's just I don't find very much replay value in those more kind of like the regular Zeldas.
You've got the video about Zelda 1, which I recommend to anyone.
It is truly excellent.
I tried Zelda 1. I don't know what to do, man.
It was actually... That video was actually nominated for a Pulitzer.
Really?
No.
I don't know why I said really. I ruined the joke, didn't I? Like, yeah. It wasn't nominated for a Pulitzer. It won the fucker. Pulitzer Prize winning YouTuber. That's amazing.
That's like this. I should say that I'm a Pulitzer Prize winning YouTuber.
Yeah, there's no way of verifying that. I wasn't going to check.
No. Like, this is the thing. It's not like, and if anybody does check, I can just say it was a joke.
That's true.
Because, you know. I'm workshopping this new kind of joke. It's just called a lie.
Oh yeah, it's pretty good. I quite like it. Just a dishonest sort of humor. I appreciate it. Zelda 1 is like, I do want to play through it. I want to get it. Because the reason I'm doing these episodes and doing these Zeldas is because, as I've mentioned before, I don't play them. I haven't beaten them. They are some of the most acclaimed, well-known, famous, important milestone games ever made, and I feel like I must play them. I must this year finish them, or maybe into next year as well, and have a valid opinion of them that's based on having actually finished the damn games. It's like why I still stick The Simpsons on in the background and season like 30, whatever I'm up to, because I don't want to be the guy who's going, this show sucks now, it's garbage, and then people be like, oh well, you haven't watched this one, and I'm like, yes I have, and it was tragic. Okay. I'm watching those goddamn episodes so I can tell people that they're bad. I think it's a form of serious mental illness, but I'm doing it. Okay,
well, but no, this is, but Stu, I do the same thing, right? Again, I told this story recently. I played through Elden Ring twice.
Yeah.
Right? I've got 250 hours in Elden Ring, right? I played through it once. I got to Millennia and it bugged out. So I only did the first phase, a really difficult boss that has two phases. So yeah. I finished the first phase. She got to the second phase, but her health bar didn't restore. It stayed at zero. So she got to second phase, instantly died.
That's what you call a gimme.
Well, no, it's not a gimme, because I went, well, fuck, now I need to play through the whole game again to prove that I've done it. And okay. So I did it again. I played through the entire game again. I beat Millennia properly. I beat every single boss. I beat the final boss. And so I could cross my arms and say, yep, I hated that. That was rubbish.
I think it's very respectable.
Quite a stubborn guy, aren't you?
I think it's very respectable. Like, I think it's the apotheosis of criticism, to be honest.
This is the thing. There's two things about it. Is number one is I wanted to like it so badly. I really, really did. I'm considering going through a third playthrough because I've just discovered something that I think might make me enjoy it more.
Did you find out about the attack button?
There's an attack button?
Oh my god, Shamey.
But the second thing about it was that I don't believe in slagging something off unless I've actually put in the time to engage with it properly. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to sit there and go, like... I mean, for example, Dark Souls 2, right? I'm actually just playing that through now. Like, ostensibly for the first time, apparently I've already got 20 hours in it. I do not remember. But I'm playing that through... And I'm not enjoying it because I think like the animation, I think it's really janky. I think the animations are really, really like are really bad in a way that feels bad to play for me. But I'm still going to go through that fucker Because I don't want to come in and just give you a half-baked, uninformed opinion if I'm going to have a discussion about it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to create the impression that I started playing these Zelda games so I could say, they're shit, actually, because that's not, you know, what I'm going for here. And Ocarina, as we've heard on the previous episode about Zelda with us, I didn't enjoy it, and I think I've pieced together the reasons why I didn't enjoy it and how I hamstrung my own experience. And with Wind Waker, I was just taken aback by the fact that I could sit up and say, you know what? That's a good fucking game. I had a great time. I really enjoyed playing that game. I had issues with it, yes, but I have issues with everything, you know? And having played Ocarina and not liked it, I think made me like Wind Waker even more. If I hadn't played Ocarina, maybe I wouldn't have liked Wind Waker. Maybe I wouldn't have seen the ways that it shaved off the issues that I had with that game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, then again, I played the Wii U version, you know, with the upgraded graphics, upgraded graphics. That's obviously a point of contention, but
it doesn't matter as much as people say.
It doesn't matter as much. I feel like I ought to qualify my blur at the start, which was mostly joking.
Should. You should absolutely explain your blur.
Well, it's literally only about the graphics, because I tell you right. Here's an analogy that you two guys will probably understand, and our listeners may not.
Cool, I love analogies.
Do you remember when, for some reason, they recolored a load of Archie comics by doing all this weird lighting effects and shadowing on them? When
the Sonic ones, you mean?
The Sonic Archie comics, when
they did a digital recolor of them. Yeah, and it was terrible.
I forgot that Archie means something else if you're not a weird Sonic nut like us. It was terrible. This is not terrible, but it's like, the reason why those recolors were worse is because that art was designed for flat color like they used to do in comics in those days.
Yeah.
And so was Wind Waker. And the whole point of it is for it to have a very specific, very limited look to it. And it was designed very carefully and precisely and perfectly. And so if you then just throw a load of bloom effect, like if you then take those shapes and designs literally and say they are existing in this world, so therefore light acts normally around them, you've ruined it. And that's what
Taking away from Wind Waker's sort of, I mean, the original Wind Waker, you know how it opens with the text crawl and the sort of stained glass representations, I think, of what's happening? And then when you go into the actual game, the visuals are not a million miles away from that stained glass aesthetic, you know? Yeah. They're abstract. Well,
the visuals, in a lot of ways, were Wind Waker's raison d'etre. Because this was the thing. It's like, after Majora's Mask, they didn't want to make another Zelda. Like, or Anuma didn't have any more ideas. He was like, I'm like, what more can I do with Zelda? We literally made the best game ever.
You know?
And so, but what it was somebody came in with a design for Toon Link. Because, of course, like, this was a huge part of it. A huge part of the backlash was you had that Space World 2000 demo, which was showing off the power of the GameCube with a very realistic Link and Ganon fighting each other.
Yeah, and everyone just sort of got the wrong end of the stick and thought that was going to be the game that was
coming. That's the game that's coming to the GameCube.
Yeah.
But they didn't want to make that game or any Zelda game in the same vein. It was only when they saw Toon Link and realized the opportunity to take it in a new direction that they became enthusiastic enough to make another Zelda. And I think you can see the benefits just by playing. Like, the way that Link will look at key items and objects, like, out the corner of his eye and, like, get a little, like, peaked face on. Like, you know, he'll open his mouth like, oh, what's that?
Yes.
You know, that's so charming and it's so good.
His lovely little face is always doing something all the time in the game.
It's got so much character and sense of place to it, I think.
The original looks incredible, even to this very day, I think, because of that strong art style.
Well, do you mind if I very briefly interject? Oh. Like, you know the early, I think it's the first boss, the lava one, where you use the grappling hook to pull the ceiling onto it or something?
Yes.
On the GameCube, I remember the smoke and flames and plumes looking incredible.
Oh, yeah.
I remember thinking this is astounding. But in HD, not so much. Just looks like a normal game.
Yeah.
And that, to me, was a huge point of contention. And I like the new graphics. I mean, this is the way I've played the game. This is what the game looks like to me in my head, which is what makes me think I really should play the GameCube version and get the full picture.
Oh, it looks perfectly good. It's kind of like... here's another analogy. It's like the recent Asterix animated miniseries on Netflix. One of the best animations that has been done in the last 10 years, maybe even 20. It's brilliant. It has a quite good dub. And if you sit there watching the dub, you'll go like, yeah, that was good. But if you watch it in French with the subtitles, you will be laughing your absolute arse off. But if you just play it with the dub, it's good enough that you're going like, mm-hmm. Yeah, this is good. I don't need any better than this. It's fine. But you're missing just some little spark.
Yeah. I do wonder if I've... Sorry, Shane, I keep talking.
But like, I went on a very tangential route to get here.
That's good.
Because a huge part of that game's art style is its use of color. Like, when you are in that first dungeon and it's all very hot and red and, like, very, very intense, and then you walk outside and all of a sudden it's, like, a very bright blue, that's the first time I can ever remember actually feeling like I was less... Like, the moment I felt stifled in there, and then I felt, like, a huge breath of fresh air when I walked outside and it was all blue. Like, that is genius. That is so, so good. That could only have been enabled by that cel-shaded art style with very simple, bold colours.
Yeah.
So, yes, Dave, I am 100% with you. Like, the fact that they redid the lighting system for Wind Waker HD is enough of a reason to write it off, I think.
Wow.
The reason that I have more mixed feelings on it is, number one, if it weren't for the lighting system, we wouldn't have gotten that game at all. Like, the whole reason that the remake exists is because they were testing out Breath of the Wild's lighting system. They happened to try it with Wind Waker, and they thought, oh, okay, that looks good. Let's try that again. Let's use that here.
Right.
So that's reason number one why I can't be sore about it.
Yeah.
And the second reason is that literally every single other change, I think, is such a judicious change. I think every other change that was made is like just an improvement over the base game.
Real quick, that even though obviously it's against the law and you go to prison if you do it, there is actually a mod for the GameCube version that adds the Swift Sail, makes a few of the other changes.
I might believe that. But
obviously retains the original graphic. I think it's called Better Wind Waker or something. And it made me think maybe if I do play the GameCube version, which I really do want to do, I guess that might be the way to do it.
Maybe, but you know the trouble that can cause. Is if what if the nerds made the wrong decisions and you don't know, you know?
Yeah, what if you get one of those like retranslations and they make like Link say fuck or something like they always like doing? Yeah. You know?
Well, but isn't this exactly what you went through with Ocarina of Time? Like you'd gone, oh, the nerds say to play this modded version.
Yeah,
and it just isn't it?
I guess it's different now because I have actually played the game in HD.
Well,
admittedly, now I know what to do. I think that's going to be less of a problem. But I mean. It's the first time since Awakening that I've played a Zelda game and thought to myself, hey, I really like that. That's probably troubling my top 50. You know, I really had a good time with that, and I would like to play it again. I like the cast. I like how the different islands you visit all populated by different sort of types of people or creatures, you know.
Yeah.
I liked the relative subtlety of... Okay, maybe there is one and I didn't spot it, but I think I found a Goron thing, but not an actual Goron. Like, something that made me think, hey, it's a Goron, but then they didn't show up. There was some subtlety there. I appreciated that. I think that there's a sense of place in this game that means when you go back home to Onset Island or Outset Island?
Outset.
When you return to Outset Island and you visit your Gram-Gram, and she gives you some soup, it really does feel like homecoming. It's like, oh, it's this place. It's my little island where, you know where everything is. You know what to do. And I love some of the little silly things that I stumbled across by accident. Like, I found this big fat pig that I could pick up because I had the power bracelet, whatever it is you get, that lets you pick up heavy rocks. And I let this big fat pig out, and he went digging like a truffle pig and dug up a piece of heart. And I just stumbled across that because I was arsing around with this pig, trying to get it to follow me around for a laugh. And it turns out, no, this is a secret. You've found a secret by arsing around. And that's peak Nintendo for me, okay? I love it when they reward you for arsing around. I wish that my real life would reward me for arsing around instead of severely punishing me, you know? It feels nice to exist in the world. And I don't think the HD version, and I appreciate your opinion because I agree with you about the graphics. I really do. I think that when you, I'm trying to think of a good comparison for it, but I think honestly the digital, like okay, I know it's Persona Non Grata, but, the Sandman digital coloring, the Killing Joke digital coloring, right?
Mm, yeah.
That's taking away an enormous amount of atmosphere, an enormous amount of the feel of those comics.
Yes.
Because
yes.
They're like, no, this looks better, air quotes,
yeah,
because it's new. And no, absolutely not. Like colorizing an old movie, you know,
yeah,
it's pointless. It's stupid. So I get that. But of course, because this is the first one that I played, to me, this is now the game.
Well, and the thing is, it does actually look good.
Yes, it does.
It's not like they haven't ruined it and made it look bad, but they've changed perfection and made it look fine. So, yeah, you probably had a perfectly good time playing it.
Yeah. I did. I had a lovely time playing it, and I'm really glad that I did.
But do have a go. Do have a look at the GameCube version at some
point. I will.
Point.
Of course, if we do a Twilight episode, if we do any more Zelda episodes, which I'm sure we will, if that's okay with yous, maybe there could be sort of introduce an update on whether or not I've played the GameCube version, and I can follow up on it. But, I used to have the GameCube version. I have played it before, but only a bit. And now that I know what to do, I feel like it would be breezy. I mean, now I know what to do in Ocarina, and I have absolutely no urge to revisit it whatsoever.
Mm, yeah.
Maybe a long way in the future, I might play the original N64 version instead of the upgrade version and see how I feel.
If you ever return to it, play the 3DS version, because that's actually probably
more interesting. Yeah, but then I have to play it on a 3DS, and I don't want to.
Well, you've got to.
Well, fine then. Jesus Christ. You drive a hard bargain, Bulma.
It just helps you enjoy it a bit more, is all, because you're like, oh, pretty.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I want to sort of wrap it up a bit, because I don't want to ramble too much, because I feel like this has been a nice sort of breezy overview of how we generally feel about the game, but I just want to say how lovely it was to, for the first time, pretty much, play a 3D Zelda and go, oh, I see what the fuss is about. I see the sense of adventure. I like it. There's charm here. There's real craft here, to quote Ken. No one's going to get that, sorry. But it's a game that's entered my top 50, probably. It's in my heart now. I think about this game a lot. I think about the sailing around and the music and just the general sense of melancholy, this joy and melancholy, and the theme of look like literally yearning for oblivion is something that really speaks to me, which is a dark thing to say, but it does, because I think about that sort of thing a lot. And this idea
they remade it recently.
Oh, I see. Sorry, that took me a while. Yes. Oh, God, I'm sorry. I feel like a dick now, because I just went completely over my head. That's a game I spent £50 on, played for 2 hours and then uninstalled. Fucking hell.
Wind Waker the last time in a Zelda game that it really felt nice to cut the grass?
I mean, cutting the grass in Twilight Princess feels like shit, so maybe.
Yeah, I think it might be the last time, guys. And it was, and it used to be such a big part of the old Link's Awakening experience.
Could I nominate possibly Link Between Worlds? I think that had some decent grass action.
Of course you can. Yeah, I forgot entirely about that. Ooh, might have to revisit
that. You know how everyone forgets that Link Between Worlds exists, and it's one of the best ones.
It was
so
good.
No, absolutely. This is the thing, is I keep harping on this point, because people are like, oh no, they needed to do Breath of the Wild because the Zelda formula was getting completely stale and there was no other way they could have done it. And I'm like, but no, that's not the game that kind of refreshed the formula. That happened in 2013 with A Link Between Worlds.
I think I've said it before on this podcast, but the moment when you first become a painting in that game and the implications you can now do, I actually got a bit emotional. It's like, oh my God, these people are geniuses.
So good. Like, they are geniuses. So good at their jobs.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing, you know, when someone implements something that you would never have thought of, and yet it's the best fucking simplest idea. Yeah. That's what Nintendo are very, very good at, I think. And it's interesting, looking back at sort of Wind Waker with that perspective, is really, it doesn't really innovate, does it? Like, I mean, the stuff out on the ocean is very interesting, but it's still quite regimented in the sense of, like, go here, give bait, find out what's going on, solve the puzzle.
There's a lot that it does that I think is, and I'd forgotten a lot of it until I kind of went and looked at it again for this, that's like, oh, that's Breath of the Wild. Oh, that's Breath of the Wild. Like having the whatchamacallit, you know, the thing, what do you call it? The thing you glide with. No, the gliding thing.
The leaf, the big leaf,
And then they built an entire game around that later, but that you had that in this. The Koroks, those guys. The way the little moblin guys look is kind of directly the same as
it actually is quite similar now that you mentioned it.
It has a lot in common. I really think Breath of the Wild is essentially the next Zelda game after this on my personal track. Like, I didn't really enjoy... Like, Twilight Princess, I enjoyed it at the time, but I've never felt the need to revisit it. I didn't enjoy Skyward Sword. But it's not just that I loved Breath of the Wild and I loved Wind Waker. It's that they kind of speak to each other in various ways.
You're right, they do. I do see the extrapolation there,
And this one does end saying, like, and next, something complete... Now, I don't know, because I do not consult it anymore, if Breath of the Wild is linked to this on the official timeline or not. But to me, it is.
Well, supposedly, spiritually, it is,
So far as I understand it, Breath of the Wild was apparently, like, functionally, it is just a complete reboot.
Mm.
Breath of the Wild. It is just, like, a whole new timeline, a whole new story, which I really like.
Yeah.
But apparently the official explanation is that it takes place so far in the future that... nobody knows which timeline it's on. Like, all of them have converged again.
Oh, thank goodness. They've kind of gone like, actually, forget all that. Let's just make games.
Exactly. It is functionally, like, just a complete reboot.
Right. You know, it's interesting, this timeline stuff, because I play... one of my favorite games on the Switch is Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity, a very, very badly running sequel to Hyrule Warriors that is initially set in the Breath of the Wild sort of world. And a lot of people got very upset because it's... apparently marketed as being like, find out what happened, like find out about the calamity that destroyed everything. And then they pull a swerve where the champions from, I think from the future or something, from another timeline, come through a portal and you actually save the world. You actually prevent the calamity in the end. And people were very upset about that. And I just found myself thinking like, well, why?
Yeah.
You know what happened.
Because you can't add it to the wiki, because it disagrees with this is why I don't like the timeline. It isn't art, it's spreadsheets. The timeline.
It's interesting when you've got something that people care so much about that the Nintendo couldn't give a fuck, you know. And I mean that in a good way. They're just like, okay, yeah, this is a bit muddy, but like, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't affect the game. And I think Wind Waker having that theme of finality of this is over, the legend is over, you're just people now, Tetra and Link, that's who you are. You are not the hero of time and the princess. You are Tetra and Link, and you're going off to have a life, even though it may not be perfect, because that's what life is like.
Yeah.
Okay. I... resonates with me to an enormous degree. And
yeah, it's kind of like The Last Jedi if it was actually good.
Well, I mean, I don't...
I'm winding you up, don't worry.
You have wound me up quite a lot. I'm going to have to do the shoulder brush now in real life. There, I've done it. actually, I rewatched that quite recently. I couldn't finish it.
Really?
And I used to love that shit, and now I'm just having a hard time with it. Anyway, yeah, it's exactly like The Last Jedi. That's right, mate. But no, I think thematically and story-wise, I couldn't really fault it at all. And I will rewatch that finale on YouTube many times. I know I will. I will revisit it. I think that that final boss fight with Ganondorf is, yes, it's piss easy, but it's not about that. It's about desperation and the spectacle, and it perfectly winds things up, I think. The fact that you defeat the puppets and then climb their strings, I mean, come on. How good is that, right? Like,
well,
you are trying to force us into this role. I'm cutting these strings. Fuck you. I love that.
But, like, I also love what it says about Ganon, because before it was almost like Ganondorf was the shell and Ganon was the real creature inside. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it's like he's playing a role. He's putting on this, like, macabre puppet show, this theater, this, like, pretense. Oh, I have to do this because this is what Ganon does.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all for naught. It's all for nothing. Do, like, his heart's not in it anymore. It's horrible.
I mean, you could argue that it's quite meta in the sense of maybe being like, no, this is what Zelda has to be. This is what has to happen.
Yes. Well, I think that was the point, was, like, the whole point of the game is this is what Zelda has to be, and we're breaking away from that. And that's why I'm so disappointed that as the series went on, it just returned to that often.
Swerved straight back and became immediately less interesting.
That's happened with so many different things, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Because you know what? It's like history does repeat itself, because Breath of the Wild kind of did the same thing. It was Calamity Ganon. Was Ganon, having done this so many times, that he's now completely lost all sense of self? He's just this raging beast.
Hmm.
You know, he has no, like, personality anymore. It's just,
he
doesn't even remember why he's doing this. It's just pure malice. And so I thought, oh, that's an interesting take on that. Again, it seems to be kind of repeating what Wind Waker did, but okay, yeah, I'm with you. And then Tears of the Kingdom comes out, and it's just Ganondorf again.
Just a bloke, yeah.
It's just a bloke.
It's a shame.
It is a shame.
I'm going to wrap it up now, if that's okay, unless there's anything else we want to say about this game. I loved it, as I've said. I'm delighted that I played it. And it's very unfortunate that I'm now playing Twilight Princess, which, while I'm enjoying it, feels like the opposite of everything I liked about Wind Waker so far.
I will say that some good stuff is yet to come later in the game. But it's not as good as this one.
Well, can I just spoil this? Say, do you mind if I just say one thing about Twilight Princess that I think is, by comparison to, like, the Wind Waker reveal of Hyrule, very early in the game, you face off against this mysterious skeleton man who has your weapons, your fighting stance, and specifically says only the hero can hold this stuff.
Yep.
And I was streaming it. And I said to my friend, is that like me from the future or from another timeline or something? Immediately said that. Mm-hmm. And it turns out, that's pretty much what it is, right? The hero shade or something.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And it's like, they didn't put any effort into disguising that. Is that meant to be a reveal later? Like, are you meant to immediately just get that? It seems like such a big thing to just throw away.
I don't know about it. It's not a reveal. I think you're supposed to get it.
Right,
I don't know when you're supposed to get it, whether it's then or whether it's supposed to be later. I can't remember.
I just thought that was a curious thing, really. Yeah. Because they really don't make any effort. It seems like the sort of thing that might be a fun and cool reveal, but it's not. They just tell you straight up.
Well, it might be.
I don't know.
It's kind of... it's a bit like... Yeah, it is a week ago at the thing that they did with the black and white castle dungeon in Wind Waker, where it's like, what if previous Zelda games happened, eh? What if they left remnants? And it's just, they'd already done it better.
it's true. I'm looking forward to finishing Twilight Princess so I can talk about it, and then I can move on to Skyward Sword and all the other, I want to do, like, Zelda 1, 2, I want to do Link to the Past. I've never finished that game. I want to do the whole series, and I want to have a good time with it, and I'm sure I will, and I'm glad that I can make these podcasts and talk to yous about it, because I think it's a lot of fun. And I hope that the Retronauts listeners have enjoyed this Wind Waker wank. How about that?
I thought we said we were going to tone that down this episode.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. I guess that was pretty over the line. Sorry, everyone. Please don't tune out. Thanks very much for listening. And Shami, where can our wonderful listeners find your exciting output of material?
Just type in, like, Shugles. I'm on shugles.bsky.social, or type in Shugles into YouTube and you'll find me. It's like Google, so but like, with an SH at the start.
That's what I was going to ask, yeah. Yeah, you will. You'll find some very excellent Zelda videos, in fact. And Dave, where can our listeners find you? Do you, for example, host any podcasts?
I do, yeah. Sonic the Comic, the podcast. Oh. I'm sure if they haven't listened to it by now, then they're just, like, punishing themselves over and over again every time
they don't. It's ludicrous, isn't it? It's absurd that they haven't.
Because it's exactly the sort of thing anyone listening to our episodes of Retronauts would be into. Try it. Sonic the Comic, the podcast. You find it at stctp.zone. And it's about an old Sonic comic that we had in the UK, except it's also about life in the 90s and being a kid and when there was still joy and all of that sort of thing. But also I do Serious Disney, which you can look for. That's like about talking about like Disney things and stuff. Mostly
very fucking good podcast, that one.
Mostly the increasingly bad remakes that they were working on.
Are you doing or have done Snow White?
I genuinely don't know, because it's gone down so badly that clearly we would only have the same opinion anyone did. But we'll see. I'm sure we'll get 6 hours out of it like we do of everything else. I'm called Demon Tomato Dave on things like YouTube and Blue Sky, so you'll find me there. Demon Tomato Dave .bsky.social or whatever it is. And that's it. That's me there.
That's where Dave is, and Shami. And if you like Retronauts, thank you for a start. But if you want to support Retronauts and access all sorts of exciting bonus features, you can, for a mere $5 a month, which, again, pathetic amount of money, quite frankly. Anyone should be able to afford that. And if they can't, I apologize, that was insensitive. But for $5 a month, you will get not only every single episode one whole week early, making you the king of the playground, you will access two entire full-length bonus episodes per month, which are only available on our Patreon, and they're very good episodes as well. They're not just rubbish. They're not just me talking about, like, Harry the Acrobat or something, though I probably will do that eventually. Because I consider Era the Acrobat to be Dave Siller's masterpiece. But you also access Diamond Fight's Tremendous This Week in Retronauts. This Week in Retro Columns. Not This Week in Retronauts. We got This Month in Retronauts, which is our monthly community podcast, which stars Diamond Fight and often features me making goblin noises in the background to annoy them. But that's very good too. So that's an enormous amount of stuff that you get. And it's all wonderful. And I'm only in a bit of it. So if you don't like me, I'm not going to be there all the time, you know? You can just, like, tune me out for all I care. I'm not bothered. Don't matter. But seriously, please don't do that, because, you know, I'm a desperate man. Thanks very much for listening to this Wind Waker ramble. And we'll probably be back with a Twilight Princess ramble that will be two solid condensed hours of swearing. So what do you reckon? Looking forward to that?
Yeah.
Us? Yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah!
No, I super am, especially because there's some better stuff later on in the game, and I'm interested to hear about it.
You know, I've been calling it Toilet Princess because I don't like it very much. I was trying to think of a better one, and then twice Shite Princess, but I think Toilet Princess is funnier.
Toilet
Princess.
And then
also I realized there probably is like an anime called Toilet Princess, and it would get confused the algorithm. And I don't really want probably. That. You know, I don't want anything to do with that.
Or someone on OnlyFans called that.
Yeah, most likely. Not that I would know. Anyway, take care, everyone, and we'll speak again soon. I love you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.